I just want to say I really agree with Seth's comments about having to link inequality, and I would also add democratizing our workplaces and society more than what it is right now, because we're not going to be able to move forward effectively if we don't do these things. So my name is Rebecca Keach, and while I'm an auto worker at the GM assembly plant in Oshawa, I'd just like to clarify that I'm not speaking in any way as a representative of General Motors or my union Unifor. I'm only speaking as an activist with Green Jobs Oshawa and as a rank and file auto worker. So what is Green Jobs Oshawa? Green Jobs Oshawa is a coalition of workers, environmentalists, academics, and community members. We came together in response to the announcement by General Motors that they were closing the Oshawa assembly plant. We recognized in the midst of a climate crisis requiring immediate action and a community facing massive job loss and disruption, the need for a bold idea. We called for public ownership of the GM plant for production of battery electric vehicles or other socially beneficial production that would prioritize social need over corporate greed. A little bit of background. General Motors has been producing vehicles at their Oshawa facility for just over 100 years. It was one of the most decorated, productive, and efficient plants in North America and had produced in excess of 20 million vehicles. In November of 2018, GM announced that the Oshawa facility would be unallocated. On December 18, 2019, the last truck rolled off the line, and thousands in Oshawa and the surrounding community were left unemployed. When GM announced the closure of the Oshawa facility, there was anger and outrage from the community and across Canada, but almost no political response. Doug Ford shrugged his shoulders and said the ship has already left the dock. And Justin Trudeau promised support for workers, but took little action to keep people working. Unifor, the workers' union, expressed outrage and vowed to keep the plant open. The union launched an expansive media campaign, which included TV and newspaper ads that shamed GM for leaving Canada after taking billions in a taxpayer bailout. There were lawn signs, T-shirts, and banner actions. GM Oshawa, which employed over 17,000 hourly workers at its height, had less than 2,500 hourly workers when it announced the closure. GM's withdrawal from Oshawa was painful, particularly in light of the brutal attacks on workers' wages and working conditions, as the corporation had demanded concessions for continuing product and employment. In May 2019, the union agreed to call off its campaign in exchange for GM maintaining aftermarket parts production that secured 300 jobs. Unifor noted that this agreement would also keep the plant viable for future production. Then, in 2020, just a year after GM successfully shed the previously well-established workforce and upended the lives of thousands more through the supply chain, they announced new truck production at the Oshawa facility. While jobs coming to the community was significant and was desperately needed, the return of truck production by GM was also problematic. It leaves the power to make future decisions impacting the community in the hands of a corporation only driven by profit, and it doesn't address the fact that there can be no long-term future for gas-powered pickup trucks in the time of climate crisis. There was another strategy with long-term benefits that should have been pursued by the government in Unifor. Conversion of the plant under public ownership for socially beneficial manufacturing and a transition to a sustainable future. Green Jobs Oshawa took up that call, and our message resonated with many. The foundation of this vision is that there's a climate crisis which demands decisive and bold collective action on a scale that requires government intervention. Individuals cannot do this alone. We must recognize that decisions based on corporate profits are not in the best interests of workers, communities, or society. We believe that manufacturing capacity must be protected and is essential to the sustainability of our future so that we are able to respond quickly and effectively to challenges. However, that manufacturing should not be done for profit, which is why we promoted a publicly owned Crown Corporation. To bring this vision to life, we commissioned a preliminary feasibility study based on a triple bottom line. Economic, social, and environmental benefits were all considered to make the case that battery electric fleet vehicles anchored in government procurement and publicly owned could be a viable model. This is just one example of what could be done with a nationalized facility. We also launched a website, did media interviews, created a Facebook page, spoke at events, passed resolutions, and raised awareness that another way was possible. Our message was covered by mainstream television and daily newspapers. We were asked to speak at the global climate strike in Toronto and participated in events on public ownership and just transitions. There was even international interest. And then the COVID-19 crisis came, and the foundations of our call for government intervention at the GM Oshawa facility became even more relevant as Canadians quickly became aware of how unprepared we were for the pandemic. Global supply chains vanished, and lives were put at risk and lost due to inadequate social planning and manufacturing strategies. It is dangerous, as the pandemic has demonstrated, to not be self-reliant for the necessities that meet the basic health and safety needs of our population. So Green Jobs Oshawa called for production of essential medical equipment and supplies at the Oshawa complex. There were examples of auto parts suppliers pivoting production in a matter of days and weeks across the world, including plants in Warren, Michigan, and Indiana, where GM quickly started production of ventilators and masks when faced with the threat of government orders. We were excited when it was announced that GM would be producing 10 million masks at its Oshawa plant under a government contract for cost, not profit. Although we felt this was not nearly enough, this contract and conversion were very significant. It was a modern illustration that it is possible to quickly convert manufacturing capacity to address social need instead of profit when there is political will. Green Jobs Oshawa joined the Canadian Federation of Nurses Unions, the Ontario Council of Hospital Unions to issue a joint statement calling on the government. We wanted them to mandate the production of N95 respirators at the GM Oshawa plant, just as GM had been doing at their plant in Michigan. The statement noted, "It remains remarkable that during this health crisis that there have only been incentives, but no direct pressure on companies to convert their facilities to address this social emergency. What has been needed in this emergency was not subsidies and incentives, but decisive government action, comprehensive planning, and the use of emergency powers to mandate the conversion of manufacturing plants to prioritize public needs." Of course, this is the same scale of action that is needed to address the climate crisis before us. And where are we now? The GM announcement that truck production would be returning to Oshawa has caused the Green Jobs Oshawa campaign to be set aside for the moment. While we were not successful in bringing the plant under public ownership or converting it to electric vehicle production, we have been part of an important conversation around the role of workers in addressing the climate challenge ahead of us. Green Jobs Oshawa is certainly not the first group to respond to plant closure with bold plans. The Lucas Plan is a truly remarkable project that was set in motion in 1974 when Lucas Aerospace announced the need to restructure the company, which would include job loss. A worker organization known as the Combine first sought support from the government to nationalize, but then accepted the suggestion to create an alternative corporate plan for socially beneficial production across the company. The following information is from the story of the Lucas Plan. Around half of Lucas Aerospace output supplied military contracts. Since this depended upon public funding, as did many of the civilian contracts, the Combine argued that state support would be better put to developing products that society needed, rather than the state supporting workers through paying redundancy money when they were put out of work. 150 different product ideas were put forward by the workforce. Proposals included an expansion of 40% in the production of kidney dialysis machines, which at the time were being manufactured at one of the Lucas sites. The Combine regarded it as scandalous that people could be dying for the want of a kidney machine when those who could be producing them are facing the prospect of redundancy. Other proposals included the development of heat pumps, solar cell technology, wind turbines, and fuel cell technology. I think it's pretty interesting that this was back in 1976, 1974, because these are things that we certainly could be using now. The proposals were rejected out of hand by Lucas management, indicating they would not diversify from aerospace work, even though they had clearly indicated that aerospace work was in decline and there was some manufacturing of industrial and medical equipment already being carried out on some of their sites. And this sounds very familiar to me. While individual trade unions and the labor government supported the Combine's plan in principle, there was neither the structure in place nor the political will to put pressure on Lucas Aerospace Management to negotiate with the Combine to implement the plan. An opportunity was lost to make a company receiving public money accountable to the community in which it served. 40 years, the products put forward by the Combine and their workers' plan are now mainstream. Meanwhile, the Lucas Aerospace, as a company in its own right, no longer exists. I found the Lucas plan to be brilliant, and I find that it confronts you with big questions, like who decides what will be built, how it should be built, and where it should be built. This incredible struggle is still relevant and inspiring decades later. If you're interested in learning more about the Lucas Plan, there's a wealth of information online, and a good starting point would be thelucasplan.org.uk. Another interesting struggle was Argentina, which became a hotspot of worker action during the financial crisis of the early 2000s. With many businesses going bankrupt and unemployment rising as high as 20%, a movement of workers taking control of shuttered factories sprang up. Their motto was occupy, resist, produce. They went to work, fought in court, and in some cases were able to successfully get converted to cooperatives. Another interesting example is the worker response to the closures of the GN driveline factory in Florence. I have to admit, I'm not well informed about this struggle, but it is still going strong after 3 years. This is a brief description from an article by Lorenzo Feltrin and Emmanuel Leonardi, published March 28, 2024. On July 9, 2021, Melrose Industries announced the closure of its GKN driveline, which is an ex-Fiat factory of car axles in Florence, and the layoff of its workers, more than 400. While in many such cases, the workers and unions settle for negotiating enhanced redundancy benefits, the GKN Factory Collective occupied the plants and kickstarted a long struggle against decommissioning. However, what makes the GKN Florence dispute really unique is the strategy adopted by the workers, who sealed an alliance with the climate justice movement by drafting a conversion plan for sustainable public transport and demanding its adoption. Such a strategy engendered a cycle of broad mobilizations, repeatedly bringing tens of thousands to the street, so that the dispute is still open and the factory remains under occupation as of today. That was one of the things that made Green Jobs Oshawa very, very powerful as well, was community coalitions. And there is one very exciting and ongoing campaign in Canada from the Canadian Union of Postal Workers. It's called Delivering Community Power and is an excellent example of a union taking a proactive approach. They are reimagining Canada Post with services to support every community. They have proposed such innovative ideas as postal banking, elder check-ins, becoming part of a nationwide EV charging network. One thing that I didn't know is that there are more postal locations than there are Tim Hortons in Canada. They suggest their post offices could become hubs of the green new economy. They are calling for the electrification of their fleet vehicles, retrofitting Canada Post buildings with solar panels, and expanding the use of Canada Post as a consolidated last mile delivery to ease congestion and pollution caused by too many delivery trucks that aren't full to capacity. This is an excellent example of a proactive approach from the union. Please check out their campaign at deliveringcommunitypower.ca. And I'd like to say that I'm sure that everyone here does, but please support postal workers as they continue their fight for fairness and dignity against their employer in their strike right now. These are examples of how dynamic the fight for manufacturing just transition can be. Some were not successful and others to varying degrees, but by fighting back, these workers have created space for others to also fight and think bigger. I'd like to just briefly note the Green Jobs Oshawa preferred public ownership rather than a cooperative model, and we recognize the importance of transforming our transportation systems so that there is major investment in public transportation, not simply trading gas vehicles for battery electric. This conversation is about much more than just manufacturing. This is about every community in Canada, and we need to consider not only manufacturing, but the energy sector, protecting food production, housing, and providing that the basic needs of all Canadians are met. So not only do we survive, but we thrive. Canada should be a leader in sustainable living. The question of conversion and public ownership must be a key part of the strategic discussion of implementing a just transition. A just transition encompasses environmental, social planning, and the funding are essential, and funding are essential for successful conversion strategies. Unions have a critical role to play in educating their members about the challenges, mobilizing and harnessing the strength of their members to drive positive change and to really think big about transformative change. We need our government to abandon the notion that profitable corporations mean secure communities. They don't. Wealthy corporations do not mean healthy communities. Our world is changing quickly. We need to expand the role of public service and quit relying on a piecemeal network that is based on making the rich richer. Corporations continue to show complete disregard for environmental and social devastation caused in the pursuit of their profits, and they won't stop if we don't make them. If workers and communities don't fight to be part of the conversation, they're going to be left out. In closing, I recently listened to a webinar with Elizabeth May, and she made a comment along the lines of, "We must have a just transition or we will be faced with unjust disruptions." And I couldn't agree more. The evidence that the environmental crisis threatens the planet is irrefutable and demands immediate, decisive collective action. The climate crisis is going to change everything about how we work, live, and play, whether we are ready for it or not. And I would rather be ready. Thank you.